We love supporting and promoting the creators of musical theater throughout the world, and we would love to have your support as well. Go to musicaltheaterradio.com and click on the Become a Patron button, because a supportive community is a strong community. Welcome back to another episode of Be Our Guest here on Musical Theater Radio. I'm your host, as always, Jean-Paul Jovanoff. Be it theater or life in general, it's a fact that you don't know what you don't know. I've been doing theater for who knows how long, and I'm still discovering things, learning things. And today, we have the authors of The Stage Actor's Handbook, Traditions, Protocols, Etiquette for the Working Aspiring Professional. I'd like to welcome to the show, to talk more about the book, Michael Kostroff and Julie Garnier. Michael, Julie, hello.
Hi.
We're so happy to be joining you today.
I'm looking forward to learning more about the book and the reasons I wrote it. But before we do, I want to get the audience to know who you are. So I always do a 30-second bio. So Julie, we're going to start with you. Who is Julie in 30 seconds?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I am a singer, an actor, a writer, a producer, and a director. Most recently seen in the first national tour of Come From Away, which some of your Canadian audience may know about. We had the best time in Canada. It was like we were rock stars up there. I have a dog named Pepper. I live in Los Angeles and I spend part of my year in New York City. And I love food on the side. So when I'm not doing theater, I'm obsessing about all things food.
Nice. And Michael, in 30 seconds, who are you?
I'm a native New Yorker who identifies more with Charlie Brown than anyone else I can think of, neurotic and insecure. I wear a lot of hats and it never feels like enough, but I love all the things that I do. I feel very fortunate to make my living as an actor. I'm best known for The Wire. I toured with the producers in Les Mis. I teach, I coach, I mentor a lot. Nachos solve everything. And I'm a stickler for grammar and rules in general, like the rules of how to attend the theater and the do's and don'ts. I'm very curmudgeonly in those departments. And I have a cat named Link, who is officially the best cat in the entire world. I took a vote here at the house, and he's the best cat.
Yeah, and you live alone aside from the cat, so the vote was unanimous.
Like, he didn't even get a vote.
No.
It was unanimous. Yeah.
Your house sounds like a dictatorship. A little bit. Okay. Nice. Yeah. That's okay. It's a cat. My cats rule me too. So, yeah. So before we get into the book, I'm always curious. Were you both always into musical theater and theater growing up, or was that something you discovered a little bit later in life? Julie?
I was singing at a very early age. I started singing at the age of 4. I started singing at church at the age of 6. And was leading our choir by the age of 9. But I didn't actually get into theater until a girlfriend of mine in elementary school wanted to audition for a local production of Wizard of Oz at a local high school. They wanted to use little children for the Munchkins in the Munchkinland scene, and also in Oz, because everyone's supposed to be little in Oz. And she said, come with me to the audition. I'm nervous. I'm scared. I've never done this. And so we both went. And she said, why don't you audition too? And I was like, I don't know. And I didn't have any music with me. So I sang the theme song from Cheers, When Everybody Knows Your Name. That was my first audition song, a cappella, because I knew nothing else except for religious music. And I just didn't think that was appropriate. And I got the job and she didn't. And that's kind of how I got bitten by the bug.
I've known Julie for years. I've never heard this story. This is really good.
That was my first audition. When everybody knows your name. Yeah, that was my first audition song.
The weird thing is, I sang that in college in one of my classes as well. Because
it's a great song. Think about it. Singing your way in the world today takes everything you've got. The lyrics are fantastic.
I'm going to put that in my audition book right away.
Yes. Right? It's great. It's a great audition song. Yeah.
And Michael, yourself, were you always into theater?
As soon as I knew there was such a thing, I was like a laser beam. I have to do that. I remember when I was a little kid, the school play was Peter Pan, and somehow I was on the crew. And I looked out from the wings. I was like, I am in the wrong department. I want to do what Captain Hook is doing. I was really not expecting my career to take off so in the direction of television. I'm still a musical theater guy at heart. That's where I live.
Very nice. Yeah. So let's get into the book. But just before the book, how did the two of you, A, meet, and B, decide to work on a book together?
We don't remember. We don't remember how we met. That right, Julie? Is that still the case?
That is still the case. We do not remember how we met.
I mean, Julie and I travel, you know, the musical theater world is fairly, we all know each other, you know, and so we cross paths in some theater company or some at some event or something. I don't remember, but we've been friends for many, many years. And I like the way Julie tells the story about us deciding to write the book. So that's on you.
Well, yeah. I guess then, how would you, the two of you, have liked to have met? If you can't remember, what great story.
We would have liked to have met on Broadway, making a lot of money and getting all kinds of accolades from the press.
Yes, I'm starring opposite each other and making people laugh on a nightly basis.
Right.
That's how we would have liked.
But lots of attention, you know, from the press.
With lots of attention and money and publicity.
Yes.
And offers for things that we have to turn down because we're too busy.
Yes.
I like that story. I think we should go with that one.
We're going to go with that from now on.
Nice. So the book.
Definitely.
Oh, you want
so
to talk about
I was
book?
In New York. What book?
He wants to talk about the book?
There's a book?
What book? Who reads?
I was in New York for some callbacks for a Broadway show. And whenever I come into town, at the time, Michael was living there full time. And whenever I would come into town, I would text Michael and say, hey, let's go get some breakfast at a diner because that's what you do in New York. And there is a diner on the Upper West Side called Utopia. And we would meet there walking distance from Michael's apartment there. And
I practically lived there. I would walk in and they would just put
they
in
were like, and the usual for Michael. Yeah.
Like Cheers.
Yes. I was Norm. Yeah.
Full circle. So we were sitting there one beautiful day and he said, I have this idea for a book, but I don't want to write it. We'd both been doing shows at the time where we were surrounded by people who really did not understand our traditions and our protocols and how to behave backstage. Mm-hmm. And so we were both kind of complaining about it. And he said, yeah, so I have this idea for a book. I've done three books. I can't write another one. I can't. And he started outlining what this book was. And I was like, just grab your napkin and make some notes. And so he started making notes on the napkin. And when the napkin was filled and when we were drawing lines and parallels and every nook and corner of this napkin was completely filled with notes, I said, this thing has to exist. I can't believe this book doesn't exist. And he said, I've looked, it does not exist.
Yeah, I want to jump in on that. That was the mind blower. I thought there has to be a book on this. I was praying for, because I mean, listen, I'm not, she's right. I didn't want to write another book. It's hard work. It's not especially lucrative or whatever, but this book had to exist and it didn't. I couldn't find it. I was emailing people in London to see if maybe it was there. They're like, no, we don't have anything like that. Hmm. And no book that laid out these time-honored traditions and protocols and our shorthand for things and our superstitions, you know? So anyway, Julie, go on. So Julie said,
I'll write it with you because he and I are very much on the same page about what those things are and how they should be dealt with. And I said, I will 100% write this with you. And so we would meet every once in a while and discuss and talk about, you know, talk through some notes or how we would do this. And then I booked a show and I went on the road for a year. And I was like, I really need to focus on this job. It's very, very tough one. And I really want to make sure I'm doing a good job by them. So I left Come From Away right before the pandemic. And when the pandemic happened, Michael called and said, let's get this done. This is the time. This is the time to do it.
Yeah.
And
took it off the shelf and really went at it.
And we just were writing, gosh, 4 or 5 times a week, you know, via Zoom.
That much? Really?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes we were meeting 4 or 5 times a week on Zoom.
And you know, it was fun. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Go ahead, Julie.
No. We knocked it out.
Knocked it out. It took a couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, that's knocking it out for a book, isn't it?
Jean-Paul, this is why the collaboration was so necessary. It's sort of a big topic, and we had to sort of whittle it down to what are we actually talking about? So we ended up with, okay, we're going to limit this to first rehearsal through closing night. And that's it, because that's when we are actually working together. This is not about auditioning. It's not about acting. It is simply about what do you expect on the first day? You know, why shouldn't you give somebody else a note? You know, what do you do if you get a note that you hate? You know, and again, all based on traditions. And once we started working on this thing and started gaining momentum, again, it's a very small world. We started putting out feelers with some legendary stage folk to see if they might have something to say. And when they heard what this is, they're like, oh, yes. You know, so suddenly we have, you know, Patrick Stewart and Gina Rivera and Baby Doer saying, I want to tell them something about this. And I want to tell them something about this. And they wrote gorgeous, fascinating things that really, among other things, really reveal their reverence for the art form, their reverence for the traditions, you know, how much they love this culture of theater, as we all do, you know. And it ended up being chock full of these things. You know, the list is long. Alfred Molina, who am I missing? I mean, everybody. Who else?
John Lithgow, Leslie Margarita, Cynthia Nixon, Ken Page, Billy Porter.
Yeah.
They all
weighed in.
Jeff Daniels, Raul Esparza, Joanna Gleason, Judy Kay, Celia Keenan-Bolger, just hacks, all of them. Jason Alexander.
Julie is cheating.
Stephanie J. Block.
She's cheating because she's reading from the book, I can tell. So I don't have it in my memory. But anyway, you can tell we're pretty enthusiastic about it. It's a legacy piece for us. It's passing the torch. It's going, hey, guys, you want to go into theater? Here's how you don't embarrass yourself, because I learned most of these things by embarrassing myself. I learned most of these things by a more experienced actor pulling me aside and going, you're wrong about that. You can't actually, you don't want to say that, you know?
It's mentorship. And Michael and I are very, very firm believers in mentorship. In every way, we're both teachers. We both live our lives as, you know, as mentors on a daily basis.
I mean, in fact, that's one of the theater traditions that we talk about, is that the mentorship is definitely a tradition in the theater.
Mm-hmm. When you're doing when you do your research, were you taking it from anecdotal, from what you have, from what you heard? Did you do any other research out of that? And was there so much you had to pare it down?
I think a lot of it was personal experience. Some of it we had to reach out to specific people, especially when it came to like the more technical aspects of things, like who do you go to for certain things? Like if you're feeling unsafe, who in a rehearsal, who do you go to? If you're going to be late, who do you go to? Things of those natures. You know, I turned to stage managers I've worked with. Michael turned to stage managers he's worked with in the past. We've done so much theater our whole lives that pretty much all of the mistakes or, you know, things we learned ended up in here. And we have to pare it down a little bit, I think.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Julie. I feel like we made sure that we weren't just putting our opinions in here, and that we sort of, again, you have a better memory than I, but I think we kind of called around to our friends if we weren't sure and said, what do you think the tradition is about this? And, you know, is this accurate? Because I know we discovered at least one thing that was just my opinion that we went, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, wasn't that closing night?
No, it was about paying I don't accept comps. I always want to pay for a ticket.
Oh.
And I was about to say, don't ever take comps. And you said, no, that's your policy. That has nothing to do with, that's not a tradition at all. So we we really did a lot of checking with folks and saying, and as the thing got closer to a final draft, we sent it to, you know, easily a dozen of our most respected colleagues to say, is this true? Have we done, have we gotten anything wrong? You know, because we really wanted, as grand as this may sound, we wanted this to be the definitive book. You know, calling it the Stage Actor's Handbook is a bold move, but it, as it is the only one of its kind, we said that's what, you know, we designed the cover to look like a classic. You know, it's not a pop, you know, fun loving book. It's a serious, you know, it's already being taken into colleges and university programs, and that's what we wanted it to be. So we didn't want to have anything, any loose facts dangling that were not true, you know.
You mentioned a whole bunch of names that you talked to, Patrick Stewart and Billy Porter, et cetera. Did you find, for example, with Patrick Stewart, he's British. Maybe you talked to some Canadians as well. Did you find that any of us from different countries had different traditions that didn't necessarily, you realize, like, oh, I never thought of that?
Only in the area of superstition. I think the Brits have some superstitions that we don't practice here so much, but the big ones we have in common. So that was good. And as again, we did send this to some folks that we know over there. We both have contacts in England. You know, we've both worked and performed in England, and we got the seal of approval from London. I mean, the book is now carried at the Royal Court Bookstore and at the, what's the other one,
Julie? The National.
Just the National Theater.
Just the National Theater.
Yeah, they're already carrying the book. You know, we wrote to them to see if they would carry it. They're like, oh, it's already on our shelves. So, you know, it's at the Met gift store at Lincoln Center and at the Lincoln Center Library. It's like, this is all just...
It's too much. It's a little too much.
But it's lovely. Again, it's not, you know, it's not for our own glory. We just want that to be out there for folks, and especially for up and coming actors. But I, you know, Julie, I haven't had a chance to tell you this, but I just sent the book to a friend of mine who is performing on Broadway. And he's like, this was a great reminder. He's like, I'm like, really? I mean, this is like his fifth Broadway show. He's like, I'm so glad I got this going into rehearsal for my next show.
What are some of the etiquette you find that the new performers don't know? Like I said, they don't know what you don't know, but what are some of the most common ones that they just, lack of a better term, screw up?
I'm laughing because I know what Julie's going to say.
No. You go first.
No. You know what you want to talk about.
There's just too much. That's why I was like, oh gosh, well, where do we start?
Okay. Well, let's just talk about, you know, you're never supposed to give a fellow actor a note. And many people try to give notes anyway in a disguised way. That, so like if your colleague is doing the wrong blocking, you say, excuse me, I had a question. Weren't we supposed to enter from the left there? And it's like, everybody knows what you're doing. Don't do that. Don't do that. Just stay in your lane, you know? And there's a, you know, I'm dipping into Julie's favorite topic here. It's what we call helping, but with big quotation marks around it. Like if you're rehearsing and somebody doesn't remember their line, you don't give it to them. It's inappropriate for you to give it to them because it feels like you're bragging and put. And are you making notes there, Jean-Paul? I see you writing it down just for future reference.
Don't give notes.
You know, they'll try to be helpful in a way that is absolutely not acceptable and not okay. You know, or we, you know, we're both singers, and this is just a trick you see all the time where people are like, I'm sorry, in the music it says A flat, but I'm hearing A. So which of those did you want? It's like, come on, don't do it.
And you know that what's happening is the person on either side of the person asking the question is singing the wrong note. And they're asking, you know, they're trying to get someone on the creative team to correct the people sitting next to them. I mean, it's just...
And I think those are probably among the more common beginner mistakes. I think on the other end of the experience, on a more serious note, you know, we get very, very close very quickly in theater, and then it ends. And I know that when I was first starting out, I figured I would be lifelong friends with these people. And then I was very sad to discover that that's not always true. You stay friends with one or two people from each show, maybe. And we go on and make a new family. And it's sad when you first start, that kind of breaks your heart a little bit. So it's that's the one place where we violated our rule of first rehearsal to closing light. We put in a little thing about the post-show blues and about staying in touch, just to let people know what to expect.
One of the surprising things that I found out about that I didn't even know about was posting closing notice. And when exactly, that actually needs to happen. But the thing that was really important to us to put in there, in the book, that once closing has been posted, whether you're doing the show for, 3 weeks or 3 years, it's really important to live in a place of gratitude for the experiences that you had with that show. And a lot of times, posting will be, the closing post will happen and I'll hear actors complaining or bad mouthing their producers, like, oh, they just couldn't keep it together with their money, could they? Or things like that, of that nature. When in actuality, we've been given the gift of however much time together to do this work and to present these stories. And people forget that. And so we wanted to make sure that there was a reminder of that. There's a whole section on closing a show in our book to remind people to be grateful that not everyone gets the chance to do this. And not everyone got the chance to do the show you were in.
One of the other things that I'm glad we talked about, Julie and I wanted to make sure we were being honest and real with the way things are. So we had a long discussion about how to treat gossip. And we thought, gossip is a hobby. We're not going to tell actors not to gossip. For goodness sakes, that's what we do. But we talked about when it may not serve you to gossip and under what circumstances. You don't want to gossip in any way that's going to affect ticket sales, or diminish somebody else's enjoyment of the show, nobody would badmouth their show in the press, for example, if they were on Broadway in a revival of a great American musical about the founding fathers. They wouldn't do such a thing. But just in case, we do warn them not to do things like that. I don't know if you know the story I'm referencing, but anyway.
So in theater, obviously, we have people from ages 4 to 100, all ages, and we've all had experiences through time. And, the 4-year-old's not going to have the same experience as the 20, as the 50, as the 80-year-old. So I'm curious, I have no doubt that some traditions and etiquette protocols have changed over the years, culturally, for instance. We live in a different time than we did, say, 50 years ago. Is there any changes you've seen that people have to struggle with and adapt? And as a follow-up, even as technology, not just cultural, changes that we have to do things differently.
I mean, that's what I was going to say. I was going to go right to technology. The internet has changed everything for us. We actually have a section in the book about that, what you can talk about on the internet, how you present yourself publicly, because even if you're in the ensemble, and you're not, your name is not over the title, people still know who you are. People recognize you from shows. When you're in a town on tour and you're wearing your cast jacket, people get excited. If you take photos of yourself in a restaurant and badmouth it in a small town where you're performing, there's little things like that. You need to be very, very careful because you're representing your show. And you're representing Broadway as a whole, theater as a whole. And, it's our responsibility to show respect for our institution. And social media, it's it's a fine line as to what you can do and say in public. So definitely that's a huge change. People, you can't get away with what you used to. Everyone's got a camera on their phone.
Exactly. Exactly. I love at the beginning of the book, it says that, this isn't just like the stuff you talk about at the beginning of the book. It's not even just about theater. It's about life in general. And some of the rules that you had at the beginning, I'd love to go through those and then talk about those at the beginning of the book that refer both to theater and life.
I'm sorry for getting stuck on my thought. That happens a lot. I stop talking when I have lots of thoughts. You were talking about things changing, and I feel maybe it's just me, but I'm very much a traditionalist, and I don't want to let go of some of the old traditions that have been with us for a long time. And what we try to emphasize in the book is that if we talk about being respectful, or you know, or polite, or you know, gracious, it is not just to be a nice person. It's also because it helps us all do our work better. It's an efficiency tactic, you know, to sort of stay quiet on things that don't have to do with you, and to be available for work, and to be responsible, to show up on time. And these things are not just so you'll be an excellent citizen, but it's also specifically in theater, these are traditions. You know, as Billy Porter said in his quote, you know, 15 minutes early is on time, you know, on time is late, you know, and that's not exactly the quote, but something like that. But it's and I think people entering the theater are surprised to find, wow, they really mean we're starting at 10 a.m. It's like, yes, warmed up and ready. So a sense of responsibility, a sense of, I think also because we spend a lot of intimate time together, we can get on each other's nerves. So learning skills of diplomacy, learning how to let things go, learning to think the best of people and be kind. And listen, I don't want to pretend that either one of us is always, well, Julie might be perfect on this. I'm not perfect on this. It's something I'm always working on and aspiring to, but to set that up as the accepted norm, you know, and yeah, it's good life skills anyway. I think that's one of the things about being in the theater is you really do develop a great skill for working with challenging people and people who just have different ways of working. And I think that's part of it.
And to tie that, all of that into the question you just asked, absolutely everything Michael said ties into that, but also things like good manners, compromise, yes. You know, all the things that we have to bring into the rehearsal hall, again, as Michael said, to make our work more efficient and to get the job done. We have a very short period of time to breathe life into the story. And if it's chaos, there's just no way that things are going to get completed. So there really is a method to this madness.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not, you know, it's not a drag. It's fun. You know, it's fun following those rules. It's not like you feel limited and smothered. It's just going, got it. Okay. This is how we do it. Great. Now we can go to work, you know, and it's not like it takes the fun out of it at all. It's just that you can't like compromise that Julie brought up. Not everybody can get their way in a scene. You know, it's so if five people see it five different ways, at a certain point, the director is going to go, okay, this is how we're doing it. It's got to be this way, so that you can move on to the next scene.
Is there an etiquette or a tradition that you find yourself, it's hard for you to do because just the way you are, your personality or whatever, you know, sometimes I'm not saying either of you have done this, but, you know, giving notes. Like, is there something in the traditions or etiquette you go, I have to work on this. I got to remember. Or, you know.
I really want to fix things. Sometimes they're working out a problem in staging or something, and because I'm also a director, I go, I can fix this. I can fix this. I'm like, shut up. Because here's the thing that took me a long time to learn. I might be right. They might be grateful. They might go, Michael, that's perfect. And still, on some level, it doesn't last. It sticks in a bad way with, oh, Michael's going to do that. You know. And it is very hard for me to just sit and know that I could fix it and just not say anything.
I'm like that with music. Yeah.
You mean like you could fix the music or help people learn their parts or what is it?
Yeah. Like if I'm here or like if I'm hearing like maybe someone wants to change a key or, you know, that to put it in a place that's, vocally, I just want to fix, you know, vocal technique, or I want to fix, you know, something in a song, or if I know that the lyrics could be rewritten in a better way, and it's, you know,
that's madness.
It might be Brigadoon. Like, it's a little late, Julie. Like, let it go. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's a good question that you asked. That's a really good question. Like, what are the hard protocols for us to follow? I've never thought about that, but that's the one.
Yeah, Michael and I are both fixers for sure.
Yeah.
I completely agree, Michael, for sure on that. No, I can't say anything. I want to, but I can't.
I could fix it.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, well, that's, you know, we all struggle with our perfection, right? Well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's hard. No, just once again, proving that the three of us are right and everybody else is wrong. That's it.
that's the name of the next book.
Yes. So. No more books.
You say that now, but
I've written four and I never intended to write one, so this is it's a good.
So where can we find this book? Let's figure out the who, the how, the why, the where, and the what of this book.
I mean, it's everywhere. You can buy it on Amazon. Just look up the Stage Actors Handbook. You could go directly to our publisher at Rowman.com. Barnes and Noble has it. Pretty much most independent bookstores. Here's the other thing. Michael and I love a locally owned bookstore. So if you would rather go to your bookstore and they don't have it on the shelf, they can order it. All you have to do is say, I'd like this book, please. And they will type it in their little computer, order the book, and then call you to come pick it up when it's in stock. And the publisher is happy to send it to as many local bookstores as people will order from. Yes, Mike.
Bookstores are delighted to discover it, we find. They're like, oh, what's this? You know, we went to a bookstore in our neighborhood, and now they're flying them off the shelves. They made a very timid order of three copies, and then they're like, can you come back and autograph some more? Oh, also, if you're in New York, please support our drama bookshop. The drama bookshop in New York they stock it religiously because they cannot keep it in stock. And
whenever Michael and I are in town in New York, we always sneak in there and sign copies. So if you pop onto the shelf and just take a look, 9 times out of 10, it's going to have that little sticker that says signed by the author on it. Because we try to get there as much as we can to sign as many copies as we can for Drama Bookshop.
Yes, and we love to support them because the Drama Bookshop almost went out of business. It was rescued by Lin-Manuel Miranda. And now it's gorgeous, has a new location, and it's our little store. We love it. So, yeah.
I assume you let them know you're going to sign it. You don't just walk in, grab a book and
sign. No, yeah.
We did our first book signing there. Yeah.
No, we did our
book signing. They know us really well now. We did our first book signing. Yeah.
Actually, what happens is we stop in and we're like, do you have any unsigned copies? They're like, oh, yeah. Because in the meantime, they've ordered more copies. Every time we go to town, which Julie and I seem to do a lot, you know, we sort of alternate trips to New York, it seems like. And they always have new copies for us to sign. And they like to put putting those little stickers on it that says signed copy.
Very nice. I'm going to have to go check that out next time I'm in New York.
Was that the longest answer you've ever had to where can we find your book? Probably among the longest answers.
But it was just, it told us exactly what we needed. And that was the important part. So I'm okay with that.
Okay. What's your theater bookstore in Toronto? We should make sure we get it there.
I don't even know if we have one anymore.
Well, you need one.
Yeah, I think we had one and it closed down a while ago. So,
darn it.
Not much we can do. So, one more question. Is there a tradition that you learned while writing this book that just surprised you, that you'd never heard of before?
I can think of one that surprised Julie.
Which one?
Can you talk about Dr. Footlights?
You talk about Dr. You love Dr. Footlights.
But it was new to you, yes?
Yes, it was new to me.
You talk about it.
Oh, gosh. You're putting me on the spot, mister.
Okay, I'll do it. Would you rather I did? Okay.
I do.
This is the most fascinating listening right now, us arguing about who's going to talk about what. Dr. Footlights is a really wonderful, magical theater tradition. It is the phenomenon where you are deathly ill and performing anyway, and while on stage, you are pain-free and able to perform. And I've experienced this. I was very sick, and I would go on and sing and dance and clown, and then sort of like collapse off stage and sweat and sit on the floor. And somebody said, "How are you doing this?" I'm like, "It's Dr. Footlights." I mean, that's, I, you know, it's, it, and I think a lot of people have experienced Dr. Footlights. And I just, again, I love it. I love it as a, just a traditional concept that we have, but that was not, a, that one wasn't a surprise to me. Now, Julie, you have to find one that surprised me. Can you? No, I don't know.
I don't think I can. You're very well versed. I mean, this book was your idea. So I don't know that there was one that surprised you. Wait, was the shoes on the, no, you knew that one, right? You can't put your shoes on the dressing room.
Okay. You know, I don't know if we included No Mirrors on Stage.
Yes, we did.
We did. So No Mirrors on Stage was a superstition I didn't know about. And what I love about look when we started to research these things was multiple explanations. One was, you know, the lights can reflect in the audience's eyes. One was actors are vain and they'll get distracted by their own image.
Yeah.
One was a mirror can steal your soul. So, you
know, right.
All these reasons why you don't have a mirror on stage.
But I think you were also surprised by the fact that a lot of times what people will do is just take a sheet of plywood and put some aluminum foil on it to look like a mirror.
They use Mylar usually, which is that you know, that looks even more like a mirror. You know,
stretched
over. But there were a lot of superstitions we found that we didn't include because they were completely unfamiliar and not practiced in the U.S. Like no peacock feathers, no green on stage. I don't remember what else.
No knitting backstage.
No knitting backstage. We don't. I don't.
Can't knit backstage. Yep.
Wait, I forgot about that.
I didn't know until, you know, well after I was, you know, I did the fifth national tour of Cats and I used to knit backstage, actually crochet to be technical, every day.
And that's why that show never had any success, Julie. That's
why. Right. Because that's why I'm knitting. A complete and total failure.
No, I mean the show never
what
made
what was the name of that show again? I gotta Google it. What?
It's about felines. Feline.
Okay. So yeah, we only included the majors, the ones that we're familiar with that we thought would be more universally observed.
Yeah.
That is very cool. Michael, Julie, thank you so much for coming on today and talking about the book and introducing the world to you guys if they don't know you already. Yeah, it's a fascinating read. I read some of it and yeah, it's interesting. Just all the different things that you just don't know, but you don't know. It's crazy.
I've been surprised by, you were wrapping up and here I am.
That's
going
okay.
On.
You know,
I think one of the surprises for me, because we thought, is this a bone dry book? Is this just a rule book? And Julia, I don't know if your friends have said the same, but people are like, it's fun to read. It's exciting. It's, you know, I don't know. They describe it as fun, which was really not our intention at all.
I think a lot of it too is that, you know, especially in the pandemic, a lot of people haven't had the opportunity to get back to doing theater just yet.
Yes.
And it reminds people of what we do from day one to closing night. It reminds them of not just the work of being an actor as an actor, but also the stuff that happens on the other side of things, you know, the backstage traffic, that's right. I have a wig call, you know, I've got to make my time to get my wig and just little things like that, that just, you know, remind people, oh yeah, there's more, you know, there's dressing room etiquette and tipping your dresser and just little things like that, that remind you of being in that building and getting to do that kind of work.
And then I think the real beauty part is the stuff that these, celebs wrote. I mean, there's a Jason Alexander quote that always makes us cry at the end. It's just a gorgeous description of what it means to be a theater actor. And I think that's the gooey part. Anyway, I took us on another topic after he was like trying desperately to get rid of us. We've had enough of you and your rules.
That's okay. You know what? If it's interesting to talk about, let's keep going, right? It's okay to it's like trying to say goodbye at the end of the night, right? You start talking and then you continue talking.
You know, theater people
having too much fun.
Theater people have the hardest time saying goodbye. I've learned that you just have to ghost because you'll be saying goodbye all night. You know, we have to get together. Yeah, again, it was so good to see you. It's like, we're just like that.
Exactly. Michael, Julie, again, thank you. Thank you for coming on and talking to me and the listeners about the book. That was fantastic.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we were just speaking with Michael Kostaroff and Julie Garnier about their book, The Stage Actor's Handbook, Traditions, Protocols, Etiquette for the Working and Aspiring Professional. Tune in next week as we'll speak with another guest or guests about their life, love, and passion that is musical theater. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Yovanoff. And until next time, I'll see you when I see you.